Imagine if it was technically possible to take your classroom into a room and actually transport them into a historic happening on the floors of Parliament, or to take them to a quabbery, an Aboriginal quabbery, or take them to a protest, or take them inside the Sydney, the foundations of the Sydney Opera House, or shrink them down and actually take them inside the human body in three dimensions. They walk into this room and they're able to do it. And this podcast, I'm going to discuss the technical possibilities, the technical or the barriers to actually doing this, or the possibilities of doing it. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. Now, first off, I'll let you off the hook and say, yes, it is technically possible to actually transport your kids into, say, for instance, the Parliament House at a historic time. And the way that's done is, this is the viewing section, you have them with walk into a 3D classroom, which they do have, with all data projectors on all the walls, and students wear eye gear, which close and open the left and right eye so that for the projected images they see a three-dimensional view. It's actually quite a stunning process. Yes, it does look perhaps like a data projection, due to the, you know, you can obviously tell the reality between a reality and a data projection. But aside from that, it's actually quite good. You can actually look at these things. And when I say you can look at these things, rooms like this are fairly common around Australia. So in universities, there's 3D labs where you can take the entire class into a 3D lab. iCinema at University of New South Wales is one version where you can do this. It's basically, you walk into this space called the iCinema space, and you put on these glasses, and they can show you various things being taken to the tops of trees in Australian forests or around the place. And it's actually a very interesting thing to see. And when I say it's there, there's other examples. A lot of these labs have grown up in during the mining boom, as part of mining training. You train people, write a paper test, and then actually put them in a mine and see how they would solve a particular problem, a group of people, so they can talk and discuss. So I've actually taken interested people, potential people who could movers and shakers, into these spaces and shown them what is possible. That's one aspect. That's the projection aspect. The actual filming aspect we'll get into really quickly. There are these little cameras. I'm sure there's new technology cameras coming along, because it's been a couple of years since I did it, but they're called Ladybug cameras, produced by a Canadian company, and it's basically a series of cameras and a small thing about the size of a coffee cup. And they point up, down and around, and so they collect a 360 or 4-pi steradian view of a place. And if you have two of these cameras, computers can work out, or basically you can project one than the other. Just flip between the two. There's no need for it, but you can actually produce a 3D image. There's enough data there to produce it. You may need more than that. And so obviously the thing to do is that we can get the classes in, we've got the cameras there. There's other things that we need to do to make this happen and a reality. That seemed an obvious thing to do, and I'll explain to a little bit later how I got to say we have to understand whether we as a country can actually do this, because of understanding the overall virtual reality landscape. We'll go back and discuss that. But this is not the only thing you can do. You can obviously take your set of cameras to different situations, plot them down, and then allow people to re-enter that space. So you could have these notionally in Parliament House, filming all the time, but when there is a significant point of Australian history being explained, you can actually walk your class into it, freeze frame it, look over, ask questions, stop it, rerun it, and you can actually see all the dynamics, the expressions on everybody's faces. A full immersive experience, and immersive is the actual term. Another immersive experience is confocal microscopy. Now, let me try and explain what that is. There's been a discovery that if you illuminate the microscope image through the same lens which takes the observation, the actual light is largely concentrated on the point that's been magnified. And then if you scan this point around in three dimensions, and there's more to it as well, you can actually produce a voxel, a three-dimensional live image. Basically, there are different instruments, scientific instruments, which can actually create and gather three very detailed three-dimensional images. And due to computer scaling, you can actually scale up a microscopic sample, let's say, this eye of an insect or something like that, and you can actually get this three-dimensional view and walk and on command walk around. So you can be in there and navigate a computer file, a three-dimensional computer file with your class and make decisions pretty much like a mining tunnel. But in this case, you can actually, say, go up a nasal cavity and down through a body. Say if you took a MRI image of something in three dimensions, you could use this to navigate and understand a body. A great tool. So this gets our point that we've got the two things. We've got the image processing technology, which is actually perhaps getting old and requiring a reboot, because this requires data projectors and computers and stuff like that. And computers and data projectors have advanced, and the technologies have advanced since this time. So we've got the projection and we've got the data mining things. We've gone through the basic things of actually getting the concept together, feasibility study, and showing people. And then you've got the economics. The economics is there a better way of doing it? Is the first one, and then at what point is it worthwhile doing? So we'll answer the question, is there a better way of doing it? One of the things that I did do when the price of virtual reality goggles came down, this is pre-Oculus Rift, I could see that things are going in this direction, and the possibility of getting meaningful education by actually transporting students inside atomic crystals. I could actually generate a three-dimensional view here, or actually get them to walk around on the surface of Mars or the Moon using Google Moon or Google Mars. They have a three-dimensional aspect there that you can actually just simply wire up and hook into people's computers, into their glasses. So it's easy enough to do. And one of the things I didn't know is that looking at your class time, there was a certain setup time, a certain time that the student was in the virtual process. And when they're in the virtual process, they're experiencing, but you can't guide or discuss their process. And ultimately, if you've got a class of 30, you've got one student who can see and other people who can look on and work out what's going on. It's a great thing, and there's this focus about me too, me too. And so the obvious thing to do is actually just rescale the helmet to a huge helmet and have the entire class inside this helmet. So that's essentially the technology jump going ahead. Of course, you've got the cost of the room and the place there. So this answers the basic question. Is there a better technology? And I actually think it is the best technology for certain aspects of teaching, where you've got student three-dimensional data, but then you want to have other links of student to teacher, student to student, and then all that class of people interacting with the collective learning of the three-dimensional data. So this is why you'd want to have it inside a one of these classrooms. And these classrooms are now fairly old technology, and they'll probably go the way of some other fantastic technologies which I've seen, which people say, oh, that's 90s technology, or that's old, out-of-date technology. But nonetheless, we should have a look at it. So the answer is it good? Now we start to ask the questions of cost and scale. Firstly, we have to look at the actual entire process, that is collecting education material to put into these locations. Say we have access to these locations, so at the moment you'd have to have a day and say, look kids, we're going into University of New South Wales, we're doing a series of experiences, and one experience is this. And so you'd have the cost of the busing. They would say, go to the University of New South Wales Museum of Human Diseases, where they have all different organs in bottles. A good time. There's a whole lot of things you can do at the University of New South Wales, or different facilities. That's a bit if the government was not going to stump up the cash to build these classrooms. I actually think there is a great value. This was really discussed when I showed this. Got some politicians in one of these classrooms, and what happened is the lights went out, and this politician sort of ignored me. I wasn't dressed well, and he began to speak to the professor, and he was saying, "Oh, look, we're really not interested in schools, particularly public schools. We're not interested in doing any more investment. They're a burden on society, so we're just trying to keep them happy and keep it quiet. But what I really want to do is use this to show my massive development plans for Sydney. And at this stage, we haven't had all this huge high-rise building along the train routes that you'll see." And he said, "Look, if only I could walk people through my vision of three-dimensional reality and get developers in here, put it in the hands of developers." I realised that this was a tool that I had a vision, but people could use it in different ways, and the lights came on. And I sort of got this feeling that there's a whole... although I understood the technical aspect, I didn't understand the political aspect of it. And I was getting very close to getting a set-up of getting a company to take an image of youth parliament. There's all these problems of actually taking real parliament. We can't take real parliament, but we can take youth parliament and use it. So we're all exploring the ways forward. And, of course, I'm not going to say anything more. This is sort of died down. It's the acquisition of the data and the actual processing of the data into an educationally meaningful high-end thing, and that I think has actually got to be owned by an institution. You have your three-dimensional data sets of Australian Parliament. In fact, why not go global? This is my overall question. You have key data sets of, say, from NASA, the space station. You have other key aspects that you want to actually inform people. You have China. They have the People's Congress of China. There's all these countries which really want to show off. You can have the Russian spaceports or mega engineering projects. You can actually There's a whole lot of things that you can see that to various industries and governments and people would like to do. And say if you had an international group, you could create an international data set where these three-dimensional views were held. Some historic ones, like a historic football match or Olympics or an opening ceremony. Things like this where you can actually introduce people in three dimensions. And also the training. So what I'd see is rather than an individual company controlling it, the actual negotiation is so complex and so widespread across the world, and you need, in my view, it shouldn't be a toy of the rich. It should be various aspiring people can apply to an international fund, and you can produce an international book, sort of a library, if you like, a public library, but of three-dimensional data sets. So I've got the idea of, rather than for an individual event, you've got to get the finance to get that individual data set and to get the individual person through, and you've got an international set. We've got the cost of these centres. Now, there's certain things that it's not, although I can see a certain technology, it's not necessarily something that you have to build. You can have an inflatable centre which comes up, or a pop-up centre, a tent centre, like at a festival or something like that, which is very much for if you, say, building a roadway or building a tunnel and you want something there at a fair, a sort of a pop-up one, or a pop-up one for a school, a school oval, and you can also have various, say, in civic centres, you can have a multi-purpose room. So some of the time it's a meeting room, but for the rest of the time you just have these data projectors around and the walls, such as done. And if you have got enough planning, you can actually plan it into your community centre builds, so it may cost something, but the cost is not that full upward cost. This opens up the entire economics of moving away from a fragmented education system where the teachers and schools are stuck to a lifeline of money coming from parents and fees and stuff like that, having access to infrastructure. So a very wealthy school, say like Barker's College, has got just an array of lecture theatres, swimming pools. There's one in I think Abbotsley. I can't remember. There's one I went to. They have a lecture theatre, and you look up and there's telescopes and stuff and that sort of thing. So you have this. And this, they're paid for with balanced company, parent and government funding, it's triumphant. But that means when that doesn't happen, that equivalent government funding goes to slightly different things in a poorer public school. So we've got this lack of equality or effectiveness. So say that the astronomy centre or lecture theatre has got a very small use. Overall, as we're thinking, it's perhaps not an overall thing to think of this particular technology. There may be other groups of technologies. Now, for smaller groups, you can have the same thing with basically a class set of standard Oculus Rifts. They can move around. The only difference here is that with these cameras, the way it is now is that the students can see other students, and that the teacher can see the students, and you can have a direct class discussion. If your students have got a whole heap of Oculus Rifts on, the ability to control and move and take down notes or observe things is very, very much reduced. But that's not to say that we can't have that technology in Oculus Rift. It's just we haven't really thought the way forward. So I'm just going to conclude. I sort of learnt two things by actually. I should explain that I organised to speak with the people at Parliament House in Canberra. I set up a meeting with them, and they met me out the front and walked me through to the cafeteria, and I discussed, you know, this idea. And the interesting thing is that the manager looked at my low quality watch. I had a very cheap, $4, $6, $10 watch on. And he sort of just looked at the way I dressed and just said, look, this person isn't dressed as an executive. He's just dressed as a normal teacher. We think we'll just ignore him and wrap it up. And so that's that for me. There's just so many different aspects that is to get and sell an idea. It's sort of a really tough market out there. But perhaps Australia's not the place to start this off. There may be another country out there to discuss it. And this is sort of a sleeper idea. And as I'm going through learning to podcast and discuss things and talk coherently on a topic just straightly off the top of my head, these ideas, which have been really sleeping for 4 or 5 years or more, where I've been able to drag it up from time to time, and then it's amazing how much effort it is just to get to the first base with people so they can basically understand what you're talking about. And then when I think innovation, this person's here, he's not backed up. Innovations in general don't go ahead in Australia. You know, I don't know what the actual thinking is. It does go to sleep, but I'm in this unusual thing where I've got a new technology of podcasting, so it's not necessarily writing things down, and these podcasts you put out, and if people like them and if they happen to be good, they win. It's sort of like putting your idea on a paper plane and throwing it out there. So I hope this makes sense. This is the ability to transport to collect three-dimensional or four-dimensional data sets. That's X, Y, Z, and T, and not just a witness, but the full voxel data set, i.e. the entire human body, where you can actually decide to go through it. So if you imagine penetrating the veil between paper and literacy and discussion and the social interaction, or looking at computer screens, to actually fall through that computer screen and actually live inside the RAM of the computer. And that's really what it is. And the technological set of technological steps, and there's different thresholds. So for someone in the inner, they just have to sort of mention it and they can get money. Someone on the outer, they're just listed with more and more obstacles before they can actually talk it. And yeah, well, that's what I'm up against. But it just means that if you're innovative enough to think of this new direction, it just means that you require just the right technologies to come along to tick it off and push it forward. That's all I have to say on this topic. But for you, in the meantime, keep on doing science and thinking science.